We're doing Makot, we're up to Daf Beis Amud Beis, the second wide line. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braisa that was validated by the Academy of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya. Dalet Varim Ne'emru Be'edim Zomemin. Four things were said with regard to Edim Zomemin. And on a different occasion, we will have to discuss what does that mean they were said. By whom? By the tradition? Okay, so we'll leave that hanging for a different time. Ein Nasim Ben Gushal Ben Chalutza. Number one, Edim Zomemin do not become Chalolim. Even if they testify that the person is Ben Gushal Ben Chalutza, that he's the son of a divorcee or a Chalutza, and so he's an invalidated coin, we don't do that to them. The En Golin Lari Miknat, they don't go into exile to the city of refuge. Vein Meshalmin Et HaKofer, nor do they pay kofer. If an ox gored someone to death, and this is his third time, so then the owner has to pay redemption money, so to speak. The Torah says, In Kofer Yushat Alav, he has to redeem his soul, because he was negligent. His ox killed someone three times. So then he has to pay kofer.
It's someone whose ox is muad.
Correct. The ox is muad.
He's supposed to guard him and he was negligent and he killed someone.
Right.
So the punishment is that the ox is killed and he has to pay.
Right.
Versus if he wasn't muad, just the ox would be killed.
Correct. Very good. So if they testify that this guy's forewarned ox killed someone, killed for a third time, they wanted to make the defendant pay kofar money. And now they were found to be zomimin. They do not have to pay the kofar. Ve'ein nimkarin be'eved ivri. Nor do they get sold as an eved ivri. If they testified that so-and-so stole $1 million. Now so-and-so, let's say Chaim Yankel, he doesn't have $1 million to pay. So the courts were prepared to sell him as an Eved Ivri to pay up for what he stole. And then they were found to be Edim Zomimim. They do not get sold as an Eved Ivri. Even though technically that's what they would have inflicted upon him. That's not what they testified about. They testified that he stole. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, they said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, which is an unusual way of saying it, Af ein mishalmin al piatzman. They don't either pay if they admit. We have a rule like this. Mode biknas patur. If someone was supposed to pay a tax, let's say someone was obligated to pay kefel. He stole, he was caught, and now he has to pay the principal plus a tax of double payment, a second payment of the principal, what's called kefel. So then, let's say the thief turned himself in, he wasn't caught. He came to the courts and said, I'm sorry, I stole, I want to pay back what I stole. So then, he would pay back the principal without kefel. Modeh biknas patur. We have a rule, one who admits to an offense that would obligate him to pay a tax is absolved from paying the tax because he admitted. Now, the braisa over here is saying, if these Edim Zomimim admitted, then they don't have to pay back the tax. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Now, it's more complex than that. Because we have a rule, kivan she'egid, shuv eino chozer u'magid. Once a witness testified, he can't go back to Beis Din and say, gee, I lied, I take it back. You can't do that. Once you testified, you cannot take back testimony. Even if he says, but I want to tell you I lied, we won't believe him. You testified, we accepted it. Goodbye. So what's it talking about? How could it be that Edim Zomimim will admit and be absolved from paying the tax? So Rashi explains, Im huzmu bebetin, if they testified And then the courts ruled based on their testimony, but the court did not execute it. And then they became Edom Zomimim. Velo espik bal din lamidan bedin al zamatan. But now the defendant, who now becomes the prosecutor, once they became Edom Zomimim, so he demands of them, pay me back what you wanted to inflict on me. And he did not have an opportunity to bring him to court, ad shebarchu ba'u bebetin acher, before they had a chance. They ran away, and they came before another court. Vehudu shuzmu bebetin ploni. And they tell the second court, we admit, we were caught as Edom Zomimim, we owe Chaim Yankel $1 million. Ah, you admit, modu b'knas potur. That's Rabbi Akiva's big chiddush here. That afen mishalmin al piatzman, they don't even pay if they admit that they owe the money. So you need this convoluted case, because stam kacha, how could they admit? Yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to analyze the Braisa piecemeal.
The exemption from kefil and others, this is biblical?
As we will see, it is. Yes. Has to be. Because the Torah obligates. Only the Torah can absolve. Yeah. Sure. It's a chiv d'oraisa. It's a knas d'oraisa. So you need a p'tur d'oraisa. Yeah?
Yeah. I'd be surprised if there was a rabbinic way of serving.
You're right. There is. I was wondering if I should go into that now. There is.
And they could give the money back afterwards.
Very good, Yehuda. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. But that's a chiddush. You're right. The rabbis could get around things. Yes. We have a rule, hefker, bezdin, hefker. And through that, bezdin could do whatever they want. Like you said, they could give it back. So they could just say. Very good. You're 100%. So that's a big discussion. Right. You're 100% right. How does that work? You're right.
Well,
hefker betin hefker, so that's the big question, like you're saying. Wouldn't he have to pay, and then they'll have to give it back? So that's not our sugya here, because this is d'oraisa. When you get to the sugya, so it's drabanan, there you'll have to deal with it. You're right, you're right. It's a whole discussion in Rishonim, Achronim. You're 100% right. You're on the mark, only this isn't our topic. Back to our Gemara. Okay, so the first two are easy. The first two laws of the Braisa, the Gemara already derived. What did we say? Ein nasin men gushal ven chalutza. You won't make them into chalolim kedamaran. Well, we proved that in Amud Aleph. Ven golin lare miklat. They don't get exiled. Okay, kedamaran. We proved that at the top of the page. Ven mishalmin et hakofer. We won't make them pay redemption money if they testify that his ox gored when it was a mu'ad, kasaval, kufa kapara. Okay, so in order to understand what's going on here, we have to introduce this. So we'll skip two lines, and then we'll come back to this Gemara. Ditanya. You see two lines later? Ditanya, we have the following braisa. The Torah says, when a person's ox gored for a third time, killed someone a third time, v'natan pidyon nafsho. So then the owner of the ox must redeem his soul for what happened. The ox killed someone a third time, he has to redeem his soul for that. So how does that work? Tanakama says, t'mei nizak. You want to redeem your soul? So then, you evaluate the person who was killed. That's how you redeem the soul. However we evaluate a human being, you evaluate the person who was killed. So then how would it be? Then what's really happening is that when a person pays the redemption money, he's trying to gain atonement for what happened. That's why you evaluate the person who was killed. Rabbi Ishmael bin Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, he holds the May Mazik, that that what you're trying to do, okay, I didn't, you're trying to redeem one's own soul. Again, I'm sorry. If thy, okay, I'm doing three things at once, so let's stick to one thing at once. I'm starting again. V'natan pidyon nafsho. Yeah, one has to redeem his soul. D'mei nizak. Tanakama holds. Who do you evaluate? You evaluate the person who was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, d'mei mazik. Rabbi, he says you evaluate the person who owns the ox. So the Gemara suggests, my love behaka miflegi. Isn't their argument as follows? D'malsav al kufra mamona. One opinion holds that the redemption money is really a monetary issue. Your ox killed someone, so now you owe the relatives the value of the person killed. So then the kofar is really a monetary issue. It's not a tax. The Torah is saying you have a million issues to deal with, but one of them is your ox killed the person. What's the value of damage that your ox did? So then the opinion that says you evaluate the person who was killed, the Gemara understands that opinion holds kufra mamona. The kofar that the Torah obligates to pay is not a tax, it's a monetary obligation. Your ox did damage, it killed the person. Evaluate the damage it did, evaluate that person's value, however we do that, and pay up to the relatives. So then according to that, well, Adam Zomerman would have to pay that, because it's like any other monetary obligation they tried to inflict. Umal Savar and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who holds that you're paying your own value, he holds Kufra Kapora, that the kofar that you're obligated to pay is to redeem your own soul. Your ox killed. You did a bad thing. You have to redeem your own soul from hell. So, okay, evaluate how much your own life is worth. So that's the opinion kufra kapara. That's what the Gemara wants to. That's what the Gemara wants to suggest. And then, if kofar is an idea of redemption, so then it's a tax. It's not a monetary issue. So now let's go back to our subject. The Gemara said, "In mishalmin et kofar." They don't pay kofar. Why don't they pay kofar? Kasaval kufra kapara. They must hold that the redemption money is in order to gain atonement. Well, that atonement was offered by the Torah to someone whose ox killed. These people, they're not, you know, your ox is something you can control to a degree, you should control better, but at the end of the day, you didn't try to kill anyone. Here they willfully sinned. They're not entitled to such an atonement. Vehani, and these hooligans, lavne kaparaninu, they're not entitled to this type of atonement, so that's why they don't pay kofar. So again, the Gemara brought the third din from the Braisa. The Braisa said, "En mishalmin et kofar." They don't pay redemption money. The Gemara suggested, why don't they pay the redemption money? If they testified that his ox killed for a third time, why don't they pay the kofar that they tried to obligate him? Because kasavre, we must hold in the braisa, kufra kapara, that the kofar money is there as an atonement. Vehani lavne kaparaninu, and they don't deserve this atonement. They're not worthy of it. So that's our interpretation. Now, once we've brought the subject into light, so the Gemara says, Mantana kufa kapara, who is of the opinion that kofar is there to attain atonement? Amar Rav Chisda, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Ditanya, as the Braisa explains, it says in the Torah, Venatan pidyon nafsho, a person whose ox gored and murdered a third time, he has to redeem his soul. Tanakama holds Dmei Nizak. He has to pay the value of the person who was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, Dmei Mazik. He has to evaluate his own life. Ma'ilav baka miflegi. Aren't they arguing in the following? Demal Savar Kufra Mamona. One opinion holds that kofar is a monetary issue, just like when your ox does damage, you have to pay. So in this case, when the ox killed, you have to evaluate and pay. Umar sava kufra kapara. And the other opinion holds that kofar is there to attain atonement. Isn't that the interpretation? Amar Rav Papa, lo. Rav Papa says, no. Now Rav Papa is the disciple of Rava, who was the son-in-law of Rav Chisda. So we went down two generations. Dekuli alma kufra kapara. Everyone holds that kofar money is there to attain atonement. So why is it that there's a machlokas? Who you evaluate? The guy who was killed or the owner of the ox? Their argument revolves around the following. One opinion holds you want to gain atonement for yourself. So you have to gain atonement for the person being murdered. So you evaluate the person who was murdered. And the other opinion says we evaluate the person who owns the ox, because that's the one who's getting atonement. You want to atone for your own life, for your causing the ox. It's you who deserve the death penalty when your ox killed. And the Torah says, I'll let you off the hook from the death penalty, but pay up. So you're paying for your own life. That's why everyone agrees that the idea of kofar is, it's to gain atonement. The question is, am I gaining atonement by paying up his life, or am I gaining atonement by saying, I deserve I have to at least pay for my life that's been spared, even though I was somewhat negligent, and so the ox killed someone. Shayminan means we evaluate.
Okay. Question. Clarify. I can't. I'm not sure if I'm getting this straight. If we said before Rav Papa came and clarified what the real argument is, if we had said that Rabbanan hold Kufra Mammon, and Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Rav Yishmael ben Obed ben Yochanan ben Broka, he holds that it's Kufra Kafra Kapara. So if that's the case, Ayitechen, would it be that we would hold like Rav Yishmael ben Rav Yochanan ben Broka, and in the Brisa about Medim Zoma, maybe?
Why not?
I don't know. Just you would say that Rabbanan overweighed him, no?
So then you say that the author of this brisa sided with him, made a stam brisa like him, yes? That's what you would have. Stam could be like a minority opinion. The brisa that gives you the two opinions was stam against him, and our brisa was stam for him. Could be it's his brisa. Could be he authored that brisa.
So why are we going with his brisa?
So that you'd say that the Gemara gave it that weight. You see, Rav Chiya and Rav Oshaya included it in their series of brisa, Tanu Rabbanan. So it's a very powerful brisa. The other brisa is just a detanya.
Could it be someone who we know on Pali Hashas, the halacha would not be like him, could be incorporated into a Islam?
100%. 100%.
It's only when we don't have verification from another source that we go with whoever is more weak.
To a degree, yeah.
And so they decided what was the halacha like by means of logic, or we have Rabbanan here and one individual here. And the people who are authoring the brisa, are they also majority? Or do they have to be majority if they're going to side with the individual over Rabbanan?
It's a long answer. You want it now. there were versions of Braisos. As Rav Shriya Gaon writes, different rabbis compiled their own series of Braisos. The Talmud tells us that Rebbe had 13 versions of Mishnah Braisa that he knew by heart. So it isn't far-fetched that Rabbi Shmuel ben Rosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka had his own series of Braisos. That's not a problem. So sometimes the Gemara will quote a Braisa, and the Gemara will say, Hamani, who authored that Braisa? The author of that Braisa was this Tana or that Tana, and that's why the Braisa is Stam like him, because he's the author of that Braisa. So that's point number one. Sometimes the Braisa was not authored by that Tana, but yet the Braisa gave him the weight of Stam. Either because the rabbi who authored that Braisa felt that way, or because his whole academy felt that way. And here there might be some distinction between Rav Chiya and Rav Oshaya and any other Braisa that's quoted. And then you have to add to that the weight that the Talmud gives a Braisa when it quotes it. The fact that the Talmud quoted that Braisa, so that gives it a certain amount of weight. And then it depends on what the Talmud did with that Braisa. Did the Talmud treat that Braisa as a given that that Braisa is a part of the halacha? Or did the Talmud just quote that Braisa for one point? And then, by the way, you see some other points which are stam, that seem to go with one opinion. So that, those are the variants, those are some of the variants you have to look for as you look at a situation where the Talmud quotes a braisa that's stam like one opinion. It's not so uniform. It depends, do I have any other rule? Is it going against the stam in the Mishnah? Did the Talmud make a point of telling me, well, that price is the opinion of so-and-so, so then the Talmud, to a degree, was taking away some of the strength of the stam of that price. That's why you can't just say one blanket rule. It depends a little bit.
In this case, could we say that the Gemara sided with Yishmael Gemara?
Remember, everything you're saying is within a hava amina of the Gemara.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit unclear here. Meaning, yes, you have a stam like Rabbi Shmuel ben Rosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, according to Rav Chisna. But then you have Rav Chisna saying Rabbi Shmuel ben Rosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. He, is that just the Tano who holds that, or is that the Tano of that Braisa? Okay, it seems like the Poskim, the Rishonim, would treat it as a Stam Braisa like him. Yes, in that stage of Nahavam.
Right. So they didn't go by these, the same Kalalim that we go, majority, race.
What do you mean?
I'm saying that... Gemara or whoever decided to go with his Braisa, with his version of the Braisa, they saw, you know, majority versus they could still go like an individual. I mean, the people decide the halacha here, or paskin, they wouldn't be stuck going with the majority over the individual.
This is a much broader discussion. I can't. That's enough for now. Back to our Gemara. Maita Mayu de Rabbanan. Rabbi Shmuel, I understand if Kufra is as an atonement, I understand that he evaluates his own value because that's who's getting atonement. But why do the rabbis disagree with him? So the rabbis disagree with him because there's the same word written twice in those parshiyot. It says a little bit earlier in the Torah that if a person mistakenly sucks a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, so then he has to pay redemption money. He has to pay kasher yashit alav, as will be placed upon him. And it says by the person whose ox gored a third time, in kofel yushat alav. So shat means to place. Ki shatli elokim zera acher. Shet, Seth, was named Shet because Hashem placed for me another seed instead of Hevel that was murdered. So the word lashit, to place, is used once in reference to the woman who miscarried and once in reference to the person whose ox gored. Well, who do you evaluate in the case of the woman who miscarried? You evaluate the person who was damaged, the woman, the fetus. So then who should you evaluate in the case of the ox that gored? The person who was damaged. So that's the derivation. What's the source for Rabbanan's opinion? Ne'emar hashata lemata v'ne'emar hashata lemala. The term lashit, to place upon a person an obligation to pay, is used in both these places. Malalan bidinizak, afkan bidinizak. Just as over there it's the one who's damaged, the pregnant woman, so to here it is the one who was damaged, the person who was killed. Rabbi Ishmael, so what does Rabbi Ishmael answer that? He says, but the Pasuk says, v'natan pidyon nafsho k'tiv. If the Pasuk says he should give the redemption of his own soul. The redemption of his own soul means you evaluate the owner of the ox. The Rabbanan, what do the rabbis answer to that? In pidyon nafsho k'tiv. You're right. The verse does say that. Milki sheminan b'dnizak sheminan. Yes, he redeems his own soul, but how does he redeem his own soul? By paying off the value of the person that was damaged. They say that's not a proof that you evaluate him. That's just a proof that the money that's being paid is as a redemption, as a gaining atonement. But how you evaluate in order to attain that atonement, that's a different question.
What is Lamata and Lamala reference?
Lamata is our parsha. Lamala is earlier on where the Torah describes a man who mistakenly hits a pregnant woman. Lamala means earlier in the parsha. Yes.
Is it using that phraseology because it's in one parsha?
That's a good question. It's not exactly in one parsha. You're so smart. Okay, so there is a shita mikubetzes that suggests that when the Gemara uses the term ne'emar lemata, ne'emar lemalo, it is not exera shava. And I was careful the way I worded it, because it's not so clear when the Gemara uses this terminology that the Gemara is really saying gzera shava. It could be that what the Gemara is saying is limud sosu minam forash, meaning there's another type of derivation which is not gzera shava, which is just saying, well, the Torah has a consistency of usage of phraseologies, and that's what the Medrash Rabbah uses in many of the Midrashim, the assumption that an identical word will have an identical meaning in different contexts. Now that's a logical assumption, but then that's more of an understanding of what pshat in the pasuk is rather than a derivation. And the Shita Mikubetzes and Baba Kama suggests that when the Gemara derives Ne'emar, Ne'emar, that's not a Gzereshava, but rather it's Limud Satuminam Forash. And then there are other sources that support that. But that's a subject I wasn't going to go into tonight. Back to our Gemara.
So the conclusion here, it seems like the halacha in this case might be more likely with Lamana.
The only indication you have is that they're Rabbim and he's Yachid. What else do you have?
Well, the answer is Kasha.
Okay.
His explanation.
So you have that too. Fine. Ve'ein nimkarin be'eved ivri. They demzomimin don't get sold as an eved ivri. That was the fourth unique din of eidim zomimin. Sabar Ravam Nuna le'meimar. Ravam Nuna thought to say animirecha de'it le'ledidei. That's talking about specifically in a case where they testified he stole $1 million. And you know what? He has those $1 million in the bank. Demigu de iulod nizdabin, being that he wasn't going to be sold over the theft, inunami lo mizdabnu, they should neither get sold. Avan, but Rav Amnuna thought to say, hecha de ledle ledidei, in a case where he didn't have the funds, afagav de itlu ledidu, even though they do have those funds, mizdabnu, they should get sold as slaves, because that's what they were going to do to him. By making him pay money that he didn't have, he would have had to get sold into slavery. So they have the money, so what? So the Gemara counters, no, but they should say back to the man, if you would have had the money, would you have gotten sold? So we obligated you money, which could have ended up into slavery. But had you had the money, it wouldn't have. So you have to obligate us the same thing we want to obligate you, which is firstly money, and only if we don't have the slavery. And not Nami. So then we too, Lomiz Davninan, we shouldn't get sold. So that's not the right shot. Ela Savar Rav Amnuna leMeimar Hanimire Hecha Deitlei Ole Didei Ole Didu. Rav Amnuna thought to say as following: when don't they get sold into slavery? When either he or they have money. But if he didn't have the money, so he was on the verge of being sold into slavery, and they don't have the money, so they're in the identical scenario, so they should also get sold into slavery. The Braisa was coming to preclude a situation where one of them has the money. That's what Rav Amnuna thought to say. And Rava said, no, that's not so. The reason they don't get sold into slavery is because of a derivation. It's not the logic you suggested, but rather the pasuk says, "V'nimkal b'gnevato amar Rachmana." The merciful one, the Torah says, he gets sold because of his theft. And we understand that to mean b'gnevato, specifically for his theft, would he get sold, v'lo bizmamo, and not as a result of becoming an Edom Zomim. So b'gnevato is a miut, and that miut precludes Edom Zomimim from being sold. And that's the bottom line. So we have the four dinim of the Braisa, all derived from Sukkim. And the final din is that they never get sold into slavery over testimony that a person stole.